Well, I can't say that this chapter in Deuteronomy took me by surprise, because I've read through the chapter enough times in my life to kind of know what the content was, kind of know what to expect. But it still kind of strikes me as a, oh no, kind of a moment, you know? I read through Deuteronomy and I just feel like it's kind of like a story of the life of Moses as he worked with God's people. The life of Moses and this message of Deuteronomy are so entwined, you just can't separate them. So I'm kind of reading the story of Moses, and in this story, you just had to know that at some point the day was going to come when Moses was just going to be too old to continue to lead God's people. It's very obvious. Or he's just going to up and die. Or, you know, knowing the setting in which we find it, it wasn't likely he was going to retire. They just didn't do that very much in that day. But in some way, a change is going to have to take place here, and we can see that. And suddenly, almost without warning, it just kind of jumps on us. It's like, whoops, I didn't see that coming. But that's what you read here in chapter 31. And I find it kind of interesting in the context of this need to make a transition in the leadership among God's people that you read this challenge. Be strong and courageous. You find it three times. Here in chapter 31, it's in verse 6, it's in verse 7, it's in verse 23. And then you find it four more times. In the first chapter of Joshua, where the transition has taken place. Verse 6, verse 7, verse 9, verse 18. I kind of get the idea, therefore, that what God's telling us is when there is a need to change leadership, pass on the baton, it takes courage and it takes strength. And to some extent, I think that's going to be true in almost any kind of a setting, any kind of an organization. And the larger the organization, the more important the environment, or the more important the whatever it is, the more necessary we're going to have it is for strength and for courage. But boy, when it comes to making this change among God's people, courage and strength is critical. And it was critical for the people of Israel. Because at stake here is the promise of God. Israel is God's promise. Israel are God's people. God promised Abraham he's going to make a nation out of his people, and he did that. And he grew them into a nation in Egypt, and then God, in his fulfilling of his promise, delivers them from Egypt. He establishes them in his covenant that he made with them at Mount Sinai. He established them as the apple of his eye. Problem is, in character, these people were more accurately a thorn in God's side as opposed to an apple, the apple of his eye. They're fickle at best. They were downright stubbornly rebellious at worst. And Moses could judge, based on his experience of working with these people for 40 years, their parents and then them in the second generation, that there was going to be some problems, and they were probably going to be fickle, and they were probably going to reject God. And Moses just knew the next guy and the next leaders were going to have some problems. And so he pointed out the need for strength and courage. And these truths apply very plainly, I think, in God's work. You know, making a change in the leadership among God's people is not the same as electing a new president. It's not like just hiring a new CEO. It's not like selling your business to the highest bidder and then everything just kind of changes. Why? Because the Lord's work is about the Lord's people, and they're special. You know, we are the apple of His eye, and we're special to the Lord. And there's a relationship that takes place here. And what God desires for His people to continue is a demonstration, a reflection of His character, so that all the world watching the people of God will just know that God is pure, and that God is right, and God is holy, and God is just. Because if there's a change and the people begin to shift off that base, then it's very easy for God's people to give the demonstration or the idea to the rest of the world that, you know, God's okay. But he's not all that important. He's not critical. He's somewhat optional. It really doesn't always mean what he says. And what we've discovered in history, as well as in God's working with his people, is that attitude will bring judgment from God against his people. And very often, that kind of judgment is demonstrated in the dissolving of God's people. We've seen it many, many times. We saw it in the history of Israel. God dissolved them with Assyria. The history of Judah. God dissolved that nation with the Babylonians. We've seen it in denominations. We've seen it in churches. We're seeing it right now in that great assembly of people that came out of John Wesley. And this summer, almost without question, they're going to divide over LGBTQ. Shouldn't even be close to that. But God says, dissolve them. They no longer exist. They're no longer pertinent. That's why when you come to passing the baton, there needs to be strength and courage that come from God. The Lord has a plan for the future, his people and his part. He's going to do exactly what he promised that he was going to do. And so within the scope of that plan, God determined, okay, it's time for a change. Why? Well, obviously, according to verse 1 and verse 2, Moses is becoming decrepit. Okay, that's worse than old, all right? What he says, continuing to speak these words to all of Israel, verse 2, he said to them, I'm 120 years old today. I'm no longer able to go out and come in. And to me, that kind of looks like an understatement. But he's able to do something. He has some kind of strength. You know, he's still giving this speech. But God had revealed what his plan was for Moses. Verse 2, the last part of the verse, Lord said to me, you shall not go over this Jordan. Now, we were already aware, reading through the Bible, reading the history of God's people, that this was something that God had already revealed to Moses. Moses was aware of this for some time, probably for years. That he wasn't going to go to the promised land. Why? Well, because he had robbed God of his glory. You know that incident at the waters of Meribah where he struck the rock instead of speaking to the rock, and he robbed God of his glory. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe in me to uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them. So they knew way back then. So probably well over 30, 35 years they were aware of this. In fact, Moses referred to that very sad verdict that God had given to him three times in this book. Chapter 1, verse 37, chapter 3, verse 26, and again here in our text in verse 2. And so while it was going to be necessary, according to God's plan, to make a change in human leadership, there was not going to be any change in ultimate leadership of God's people. He was going to go before his people just like he had been doing with Moses. He was going to use a different human leader in this position, but God was still going to be there carrying out his will, dispossessing the citizens who were already in that promised land, so deeply entrenched. Verse 3, the Lord your God will himself will go over before you. He will destroy these nations before you so that you shall dispossess them. Joshua, see, change in human leadership. Will go over at your head as the Lord has spoken. And the Lord will give them over to you, and you shall do to them according to the whole commandment that I have commanded you. Verse 5. So God's plan isn't changing, except in the matter of human leadership. And then I wonder this question. Well, Moses, you're standing before these people, or at the very, very least, the leaders of the people who are supposed to communicate with the masses. And you're telling them, there's just no question in my mind, I'm stepping down, Joshua's taking my place, God's going to go over before you, and everything's going to be fine, he's still in charge. How'd Moses know that? Well, God had promised as much. But added to God's promise, and this is very important, was precedence. Precedence. Verse 4. The Lord will do to them as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and to their land when he destroyed them. And so Moses just says, hey, you've already seen how God acts. He has already revealed to you how he is going to carry out this promise, and the next steps are going to be the same. God is going to act according to his character, according to the precedents that he has already established. And by the way, it's through that same method that Moses comes to the end of this speech and virtually the end of his ministry with the people of God, and he's able to say, I know what's going to happen because of precedent. You know, I've seen this. And it's kind of sad. You know, you come down to the end of this speech, we're going to see at the end of this chapter, and Moses says, you're going to go into the land, you're going to disobey God, you're going to turn from him, God's going to judge you. Man. And it started almost immediately with Achan as an example of that kind of rebellion. It's called precedence. Moses could be pretty confident based on working with the parents of these people and these people for 40 years watching them over and over and over and over do the same thing. He could pretty much say, you know, if the attitude of your heart doesn't change, I know where you're going with this. So on his part, God was going to carry out exactly what he promised he was going to do. But then Moses says, on your part, you need to be strong in the Lord. In fact, he puts this burden on Joshua, the people, and says, you need courage, you need strength. Look at verse 6. Be strong, courageous. Do not fear or be in dread of them, for it is the Lord your God who goes with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Now down in verse 7. Then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong and courageous. Now that sounds very logical. That sounds like the right kind of thing to encourage people who are about to go into warfare. Be strong, be courageous. However, there is a huge difference between that statement and your typical high school pep rally. Okay, they say the kind, same kind, they used to. I don't know, they may not do, I'll bet you're not even allowed to do this in high school anymore. But when I was in high school on Friday, before the big game, we had a pep rally. And everybody kind of pumped each other up. Be strong, be courageous. Yeah, these guys outweigh us by 30 pounds per person. But, you know, we've got heart. Is that what Josh was saying here? You know, is he saying, yeah, we can do this. But more than that. Because their strength and their courage had to come from God. Not trusting themselves. But trusting God who would go before them, and he would run those people out of their land. Had to be from the Lord. Last part of verse 7. You shall go with this people into the land that the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall put them in possession of it. It is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. So, what is it that God promised? He said, I'm going to do to these people on the other side of the Jordan exactly what I did to Sihon, to Og. Trust me. Be strong. Be courageous. Easy to say, hard to do. Just like us. You know, we often quote, in fact, I quoted it this morning, right? Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Easy to say, hard to do. Because the all things often are the hard things, the difficult things. Not only the things that we don't want to do, but sometimes the kinds of things we don't feel like we can do. Incredible faith has to be reminded regularly. That we depend, we lean wholly on Christ, not on ourselves. That Christ supplies my strength and my courage to do what I need to do. I don't find it within myself. I don't, as one coach used to say, dig down deep within myself. You know, I can dig as deep as I can go, and it's not there. It's in Christ. Well, look at the foundation of for the future plan, verse 9 through verse 13. A foundational principle that really establishes the future, the virtual future for these people, is that they had to protect God's law, verse 9. Moses said that he wrote the law, verse 9, that Moses wrote this law and gave it to the priests, the sons of the Levi. Well, wait a minute, what? I thought God wrote the law. Yes, God wrote the law that he gave to Moses on Mount Sinai. He engraved it in stone tablets. I suspect that what he gave Moses at that point engraved on the stone tablets was the Ten Commands. I mean, you ought to know this. You've seen enough artist renditions, right? Well, never interpret the Bible by artist renditions. Always interpret the Bible in light of the Bible. But it really does seem likely that what you have there are the Ten Commands, which is the essence, which is the establishment of the principles of all of God's laws. And added to that, I think what you probably had was the rest of what you see in Exodus, all of those various laws, which we would call the oral tradition. And sometimes we just don't understand how important oral tradition was in the Old Testament culture. And so much of what the people knew about God's character revealed in His law had been passed down to them by the teachers, the elders, the priests, through this oral tradition. But now, I think what's taking place here is Moses is literally writing down all the details that those Ten Commands just sort of synthesize. And all of these details that I think he is writing down, I believe we find in Deuteronomy chapter 5 through chapter 28. Wow! We have been studying all those details of this law of God for a long time. And then Moses delegated responsibility for the care of that law. Verse 9, he gave it to the priests and the sons of Levi. Okay, last part of verse 9, they were the ones who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. Also look at verse 9, it was given, the responsibility was given to all the elders of Israel. And so the protection of the law was not just a matter of taking this copy, I believe, a literal copy that Moses made, and literally protecting it so it won't get damaged by the weather or whatever, you know, somebody get it buried in the sand. But they have to protect it in principle. They have to protect all the principles of the law so that it will not get eroded, so that it will not get affected by sin. And that was their responsibility, to make sure that the law of God was not corrupted. But not only were they responsible to protect the law, care for the law, these people were also responsible to review God's law. What did that entail? That meant reading it every 7 years. Verse 10. Moses commanded them, at the end of every 7 years, at the time set in the year of release, at the Feast of Booths in particular. Verse 11, when all Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God at the place He will choose, you shall read this law before all Israel in their hearing. Assemble the people, men, women, little ones, sojourners within your towns. Read them the rules. This is not a law or a rule for how Christians are to relate to the Bible. God doesn't want you reading the Bible every 7 years. Okay? It'd be easy for us. Let's make the application here. No, God wants us to read much more than that. Unfortunately, I wonder if that might actually be the case with some people who call themselves Christians. If that's the case, then they might come to the conclusion, why even bother? You know, if it's not important enough for us to read it all the time, why would we bother at all? And the reason we bother is so that we can be reminded of God's law, His plan, or His promises. And so that's why God said, you make sure you review this at least every 7 years at this Feast of Booths, Tabernacles, so that you can hear the law of God. What's the result of hearing the law of God? Notice, fear Him. Last part of verse 12. That they may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God and be careful to do all the works of this law, that their children who have not known it may hear, learn to fear the Lord as long as you live in the land that you're going over the Jordan to possess. So, fear, and by that I mean right fear of God, right relationship with the Lord, it's right. And it is an awesome, deep respect for God. Because if we don't really respect, truly, deeply respect God, we really don't care what He thinks, and we really honestly don't care what He says, and we're really not all that concerned about God's character. It certainly isn't going to govern our decisions, and it certainly isn't going to govern how we think if we don't have respect for Him. If we do respect God's character, as this law requires, by reviewing His law and reminding ourselves what He is like and what He expects of us, then we're going to be more careful to be submissive to Him in all that He requires of us. Now, it's not difficult to figure that out. It's difficult to do it. And the reason it is difficult for us to maintain the fear, the awesome respect for God that we ought to have for Him is because my flesh is so strong. And I have to live in this flesh, and it is always telling me that I want something, need something, must have something, must go in a particular direction, make a particular choice, that is not in conformity with His law. And the more I listen to the desires of my flesh, the less I'm going to respect God. Now, look at this human leader that's in God's plan. God spelled it out. There is no question. Nobody needed to think, guess who it was. They didn't. Yeah. Israel didn't vote on this. No campaigns, no millions of dollars spent on placards and signs, and no debates. According to God, He had already decided who's going to take over. Right? Joshua. Why? You know, why is it necessary? Can you imagine the people of Israel hearing this saying, "Oh, hold on just a minute, Moses. We think you're still pretty healthy. You know, we'd like for you to just keep on going here." And Moses says, "Well, no, there's an awful reality you need to face." Verse 14. The Lord said to Moses, "Behold, the days approach when you must die." Now, ultimately, that was no surprise to Moses, right? I mean, don't you think Moses kind of knew that one day he was going to die? He wasn't Superman. Y'all know Mike Meehan. I love Mike. He often wears his Superman t-shirt. I took him to the hospital the other day. He had surgery, so I was with him most of the day. He says, "You know, I was getting some preliminary stuff done, and I had on this shirt, and I forgot I had on my Superman shirt." And he says, the nurse said to me, "Now, Mr. Meehan, are you sure you're going to be okay going under the crypto knife?" He said, "What is the crypto knife?" She said, "Well, you are Superman, right? It's the only way we're going to be able to cut you." Moses was not Superman. He knew he was going to die. And I know I'm going to die. And you know you're going to die. And I know you're going to die. And we all know we're all going to die because of Adam's sin. Okay, that's a pretty good principle. But notice this. To hear God say to you, "The day approaches." That's kind of like walking out of the doctor's office, him having just said to you, "You have a fatal disease. I'll give you 6 months." So Moses was, yeah, he knew he was going to die, but it's pretty sure. And really, you know, that fact applies to all of us. The day really does approach. It kind of makes us stop and think this. "So teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom." You know who wrote that? That's in Psalm 90. Moses wrote it. The guy who knew from God, the day's approaching, you're going to die. We need to make a transition here in leadership. And so that's why the Lord gave him this very clear instruction. In fact, it's very clear instruction. Verse 14, call Joshua, present yourselves in the tent of meeting. Okay, this is where God met with his people. This was a very special place. And God was personally going to meet with Moses, notice, and Joshua. And they presented themselves in the tent of meeting. Verse 15, the Lord appeared in the tent in a pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud stood over the entrance of the tent. That would be pretty awesome. The very majesty of God attends this meeting where he's telling Moses, we're going to make a change. And I'm commissioning your successor, verse 23. And the Lord commissioned Joshua, the son of Nun, said, be strong and courageous, for you shall bring the people of Israel into the land I swore to give them. I will be with you. Now that word commission really means command. And in this meeting where God is displaying all of his majesty, where he is making this choice and he is making this decision, he says to the successor, you be strong, you be courageous. That's not an option. It's not even a pep talk. That's a command. Because, notice, I swore to give it to them, I will be with you. Okay, that's a good reason to obey the command. There's a second good reason why Joshua needed to obey the command. Because he was going to run into a buzzsaw. God just told Moses and Joshua, these people are going to commit infidelity with lesser gods. Look at verse 16. The Lord said to Moses, behold, you're about to lie down with your fathers. How many times does God have to tell Moses this before he gets it? Like, you know what? I think I'm dying here. Yeah, you're right, Moses. Therefore, this is necessary. This people will rise and whore after the foreign god among them in the land that they are entering, and they will forsake me and break my covenant that I have made with them. Those are incredibly sad words. And when those people chose to rebel against God and run after lesser gods, the Lord said, I'm going to keep my promise. I promised to bring them into the land. I'm doing that. I promised to be with them. I'm doing that. I promised to give them my covenant. I've done that. I promised to bless them. I've done that abundantly. And I promised to judge them. And when he judges, it's going to be in anger, verse 17. Then my anger will be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them. And I'm going to hide my face from them. See, what they were doing to God, God's just going to turn it right around and say, okay, if that's the way you want it to be, I'll hide from you. I'll hide my face from you. And guess what's going to happen to you? You're going to get devoured. And many evils and troubles will come upon them. Good news, next part of verse 17, the people get it. So that they will say in that day, have not these evils come upon us because our God is not among us. Why isn't God among his people? Verse 18. And I will surely hide my face in that day because of all the evil that they have done, because they have turned to other gods. God's just keeping his word, doing exactly what he promised. And Moses said, I know that's going to happen. It's coming. And God said to Moses and Joshua, it's coming. Sad. Now, verse 19 through 22, I'm not going to deal with. It's a parenthetic section. It's about Moses' song. We're going to deal with that in detail next week in chapter 32. That's Moses' song. So, it's there. And it's part of Scripture. I'm just not going to deal with it tonight because we're going to deal with it next week, okay? Well, look at the sad conclusion of this plan. How sad. There's this book, the book of the law, and it was going to be a witness against the people because Moses had finished the book. When Moses had finished writing the words, verse 24, of this law in the book to the very end. Once again, I believe what the reference is there is to Deuteronomy chapter 5 through chapter 28. It is the book of the law. It is a copy of the law. And there were these things. I mean, there were these copies. This is the kind of thing that God said, this is what's going to happen. In fact, Moses made this promise in Deuteronomy chapter 17, talking about the future king of Israel. He said, when he comes along, he's going to do this kind of thing. He sits on the throne of his kingdom. He shall write for himself a book, a copy of this law approved by the Levitical priests. It was good to have these copies around so that the people could read. You know, they couldn't go dig around in the ark and get the Ten Tablets out. Because all that was the synthesis of the law. And maybe they kind of forgot what the oral teaching was. But here you have this book. And the Ten Tablets, the Ten Statements on the stone tablets was inside the ark. This book is placed beside the ark for the priests to read it. That's in Moses' instruction. Notice verse 25. Moses commanded the Levites who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, take this book of the law and put it by the side of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God. Okay, that's clear enough. You're God's chosen servants. You're responsible to take care of His stuff. Make sure you take this book that I have written for you, Deuteronomy chapter 5 through chapter 28, all of the details, all of the laws of God, so that we can interact with God and interact with each other the way that we should, and place this beside the ark in the Holy of Holies, which is the place where God meets with us, which would remind us constantly, this is the book, this is the law that establishes the details of our covenant with God, His covenant with us. And this is what He expects of us, and this is how we're supposed to be living. And you put it right in that place where you would expect to find the presence of God, a holy place, an awesome place, a place where if you even got close to it, it ought to give you the willies, if I can use that phrase, scare you half silly that it was the presence of God. Put that book there. Because it represents the covenant that God made with His people. And that's why Moses said, this book is a witness against you. Verse 26, last part. That it may be therefore a witness against you. Now, to help you understand what that means, I'm just going to make an application. That's what the Bible is. You know, the Bible is a witness against us. Why would you say that? I thought you loved the Bible. Oh, I love it dearly. It is God's book to us. It is filled with God's promises. It's filled with God's teaching. It's filled with God's instruction to us on how we can relate with God and how we can love God and show our love to God and why He loves us and how He has revealed that love to us in so many different ways. And when we reject it, it becomes a witness against us. It's like this relationship. We have a relationship with God through His book, the Bible. And when we do something to break that relationship, and by the way, it's always us. It's never God. And when we do something that breaks that relationship, here's this word over here crying out saying, wait, whoa. This is what God did for you. This is what God taught you. This is what you know. This is what you're supposed to remember. This is how you're supposed to live. It just is a witness against us that we are the ones who are out of fellowship with God. Moses is not negative. He's not a cynic. He's not hypercritical. He just knows. How did he know? Moses is speaking, obviously, through divine inspiration. We realize that, but he could even speak from a human perspective on the basis of precedence. This is knowledge assumed based on precedence. What does that look like? It looks like me. When my boys were teenagers. something would come up, you know, and I'd say, hey, guys, whatever one, let me just use the illustration. Michael, not because he was always the one. Michael, let's sit down and talk. Yeah, Dad. And I'll bring a topic up, a subject. What about this? You know, it wasn't very long before all the boys would say this. Dad, you already know what I'm doing. How do you always know? I mean, how is it that you just always know what I'm up to? I can't get away with anything. You know what my answer was? Well, we're the same stuff. You're a man, I'm a man. And I used to be a teenager just like you. And I used to think just like you think. And I used to act just like you act. And that's called precedence. That's why I know. I'm not magic, and I'm not a scary prophet. It's just precedence. If this is true, and this is true, and this is true, almost always this is true. And that's what Moses is saying. See, Moses isn't saying, you know, I've got these supernatural abilities. No, he just knew the people's character. Verse 27, I know. I know how rebellious and stubborn you are. Behold, even today, while I'm yet alive with you, you've been rebellious against the Lord. How much more after my death? He's talking to the second generation who are like pristine compared to their parents. And he said, I still see it. I still see that rebellion. I still see that stubbornness. I know what you're going to do. You're going to act according to your character. And so he calls God to witness against their character. Assemble to me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their ears and call heaven and earth to witness against them. So you had the law of God that was going to witness against them, and now you have all of heaven and earth that are going to witness. Why? Verse 29, because Moses says, I know that after my death you will surely act corruptly and turn aside from the way that I have commanded you. And therefore, this warning is fitting. Last part of verse 29. And in the days to come, evil will befall you. Why? Well, because you will do what is evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger through the work of your hands. It's not going to be an accident. It's not going to be just a coincidence, something that just sort of happens. No, you're doing this. You think like this, so you act like this, and here's the result. You reject God. God rejects you. Judgment. And the people did exactly what Moses warned them about, and God did judge them. And boy, you just see this later on, as God sends the prophets and sends the prophets and sends the prophets to these people. It's their posterity, their relatives later on, generations later, but same principle. And God just keeps sending the prophets saying, you better cut this out. Assyria is knocking on your door. Babylon's knocking on your door. God is going to judge you. And we come to the New Testament. And we read all these warnings. What happens to us when we get out of fellowship with God? Why don't we pay attention? You know, it's good for us sometimes just sit down and think about the future. And say, based on what I'm doing right now, based on the way I'm living right now, what does the future hold? And that's always good for us to think that way, isn't it?